Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me on this expedition to the utmost peak of cinematic perfection is Danny King.
Hey, Brian. That was a nice intro there.
Thank you. Thank you. Definitely not our second try at this. And we don't have Amanda. We don't have Nick. We got someone so much better that, honestly, I hope they never come back. It is our Lord and Master, Jordan Raup.
Thank you. I was really happy to pay $65,000 to be on this podcast.
You definitely should be. So today, we will be talking about Everest. This is the newest film from Two Guns director, Balthazar Kormákur. Is that correct?
Maybe.
I'm assuming I'm saying that name correctly. I just don't know.
Yep.
And that is the newest film about the tragic 1996 expedition to the summit of Mount Everest. This movie stars everyone.
Yeah.
Jason Clarke, isn't it? We got John Hawks. We got Michael Kelly, who people might recognize from House of Cards. We also have Jake Gyllenhaal, oddly enough.
Josh Brolin.
I thought you said John Travolta for a second. Yes, Josh Brolin is in this. And Emily Mortimer?
Yep. Keira Knightley?
Keira Knightley? Oh, yeah, I forgot about her.
Robin
this
Wright?
This is not boding well for our opinion on the film.
Oh, I think it's Emily Watson. Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, no, I was like...
Too many British Emilys in this world, that's just...
Yeah, they have a similar...
Well, anyway. Emily Watson. Before we get into that, as always, I'd like to remind everyone to follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. We really appreciate it. We love hearing from you fine folks at home. I also want to say that last week we talked about someone who had been inspired to watch Queen of Earth because I hated it so much. And they listened to the podcast and they actually wrote us back. That is Blake. And yeah, he was fine with it. He didn't like it as much as Nick Newman. He didn't hate it as much as I did. And that's, I think, the best. That's the best that we can hope for from that movie. That terrible, terrible movie.
Oh, good. Just good thing I wasn't on that. It's almost in my top 10 of the year, Brian. But...
God damn it, Jordan. Why? I would have been fired.
I know.
All right. Other than that, if you have any comments you want to sling our way, you can also email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. But that's it. I don't really, there's not, you know, nothing else important happened this week, right?
Yeah. There was one guy that commented on our Twitter that said, we hate every movie that we listen to, that we review or you guys review. And
I
so,
true, though. I know that guy back. I let him know.
Yeah, it's not. So, but he will be probably disappointed by this episode.
Oh, yeah. Potentially. This is going to be another one of those things. Luckily, you can look forward to hearing our thoughts on Sicario. Hopefully, we'll have that podcast out by Friday. So, two podcasts in 1 week. You people hit the jackpot. And I know me personally, I love that movie. So, get ready to hear some positive thoughts from me for the first time in a while. And, yeah, that's it. So, guys, unless we have anything else to talk about, I think we should get into talking about Everest.
You, my friends, are following in the very footsteps of history. Something beyond the power of words to describe. Human beings simply aren't built to function at the cruising altitude of a 747. Our bodies will be literally dying. Everest is another beast altogether.
How you doing? I'm back.
Doug Hansen.
What do you do when you're not climbing, Doug?
I deliver the mail.
First mailman on Everest?
Hope so.
I like that.
So that was the, well, part of the trailer for Everest. It makes it sound like a pretty intense film. Pretty, like, you know, lots of danger and you know, talk about dying and you're in the dead zone. Your body is literally going to be shutting down the whole time. So this should be a thrill-a-minute joyride. Jordan Raup, what do you think?
Yeah, so Everest is not what you just described, mostly. I mean, just this concept alone, you know, we've seen many, many disaster movies. And I think with this one, it just kind of feels almost like a watered down version of the great ones that have come before. I do appreciate, at least maybe initially, Kormaker's direction. I think the sound design is really great in this film. I saw it in like fake IMAX. That's where the press screening was held. And so I think he tries to have this mix between selling the environment, then also making kind of a more awards geared like prestige drama. And it keeps seeming like he's fighting against these two things. You know, it was scripted by Simon Beaufoy, who did Slumdog Millionaire and I believe 127 Hours, and then and William Nicholson, who did Gladiator, and I think the script kind of it just feels so surface level with pretty much every character, but then there's these other scenes which you know, when someone dies on the mountain, they just kind of fall off, and it's like it's not like there's this whole mourning their loss or anything. It's just kind of like, oh, that's what happens on the mountain, and kind of that kind of scary approach to it really adds a lot. But then you have these other scenes where you know, the people back home are you know, worried as to what's happening to the main ensemble, and it just feels tired. Like you can kind of, everything feels so telegraphed from the get-go, and I think, you know, it could have used a lot more of that, kind of getting into the psychological ramifications of doing this kind of hike and things like that, where it kind of just feels watered down by the end. And especially we can talk in the last kind of few minutes to me. So, yeah, mixed thoughts.
All right. Danny King, what about you? What did you think of Everest?
Yeah, I think I can agree with most of those thoughts, although I did maybe come out a little bit more positive. Literally just saw the film. I didn't realize the 3D was such a big aspect of it, so I actually kind of went out of my way to see a 2D screening. So I don't know if I like missed something there. But
doesn't the poster itself say see it in 3D?
Yeah,
I think every 3D poster says that.
they weren't advertising this.
Pay us more money.
I never saw that poster. But yeah, so I've seen Kormaker's, like, two of his other American films, Contraband and Two Guns. and both of them I sort of, like, wanted to like so bad, just because I love the genre that both of those films were working in, and he picked some good actors. But neither one of them I thought was, like, too successful. So this one seems like maybe a step above in just in terms of overall quality, even though it's maybe kind of more of a down the middle, like mainstream film. But I still think it gets, there's some interesting moments. I didn't really know much about the story going in, so I kind of had this up and down experience where the first hour felt like this kind of adventure film that friends of mine that like going hiking and stuff would just like love. And then the second half is a very different experience and became more interesting from a dramatic perspective for me. A lot of the stuff in the beginning feels really broad, and it's just like each character sort of has a type. Josh Brolin's introduction is like pretty absurd, where he's just like walking around. He's like, 100% Texan, love mountains. and so like, I think it takes a while for Kormaker to just like get all those introductions out of the way. And so I think, yeah, we can talk more in spoilers, but I do think the second half actually gets kind of interesting. And some of, not all of them, but some of the dramatic moments worked for me toward the end. And yeah, obviously the cast is like pretty stacked. It's funny, all of them seem to be giving like intentionally unshowy performances, and then like Jake Gyllenhaal still seems to be on his like method level. Like his first scene, he's just like laying down, and like he's got you know, he's got like his sunglasses on. And he's just barely mumbling. And his second scene is like at night and he's still laying down in the same position. He just seems so out of it.
He's like the chillest bro in base camp.
Yeah.
He's the hands-off guy. Didn't you hear him?
Yeah. Yeah, see, I actually thought that was, not knowing, you know, much about the climbing industry, I was actually thought about the dynamic of Jason Clark's character being more of the hand-holding type leader where he wants to make sure everyone's safe. And then Gyllenhaal's stance, kind of the more hardened, like, if you can't do this by yourself, you should just, like, stay at home. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
It's strange they didn't explore his relationship with the people in his group more.
Yeah, the Gyllenhaal character is treated very strangely.
Yeah,
just doesn't have a relationship with them. He's like, "Welcome to Everest. Thanks for the money. It's that way."
Yeah. No. Yeah. The scene. There's a really like funny scene where Jason Clark goes to Gyllenhaal and he's like, "Man, I think it would just be a little better if we worked together." And Gyllenhaal's like, "Yeah, I don't do that. I'm a lone wolf." And then like a second later, Gyllenhaal was like, why not? Let's do it. It's like very like, it is kind of like watered down, like Jordan said. But yes, I still sort of like the film.
Okay. I didn't dislike this film. I felt really ambivalent about it. Maybe ambivalent's not even the right word. Maybe the word is I just don't care. I was kind of excited for this. I love the gray, so obviously I love people dying in the cold.
Yeah. And
I remember going to see the documentary that aired in IMAX, like back in 1998, maybe, called Everest. It was narrated by Liam Neeson, and I remember being blown away by it, and I was obsessed with Mount Everest. I thought it was like the coolest thing you could do. So I was expecting to go into this movie and like have that, you know, boyhood sense of adventure mixed with my more adult sensibilities towards the existentialism and the pointlessness of life. And I didn't get any of that, really. The movie, you know, climbing Everest is an inherently tension-filled and horrifying idea, and this movie can't find any of that. And that's a problem. Like, they're going over these ladders, over these giant yawning crevices, and I don't feel anything. I don't feel any depth. I don't feel any danger, and it's just really weird. It's like how they just kind of are like, okay, we're just up here now, and then, you know, it just seemed so easy that when things started going bad, I almost didn't have anything to hang it against. And, you know, we can talk about it in spoilers. This is based on a true story, so if you're familiar with this story, it was pretty famous back when it happened, and the novel Into Thin Air was written about this expedition by one of the characters we see in this film. It wouldn't be a shock to you to find out some people die, but it felt shocking to me because the movie hadn't really set it up. Like, this movie made Everest feel surprisingly tame, which is weird because, as we heard in the trailer, you know, there's a lot of speeches about how dangerous it is, but it doesn't come out that
way. The structure of it is strange. The one climactic point in the trail, like in every trailer, which I kind of watched after, and the posters, even the Josh Brolin like going over. That it's like in a
it's an just early
like,
scene.
Yeah, it's an early scene where they
it's
like
part of a training montage.
Yeah, exactly.
And the poster for this is beautiful. I mean, you've got this yawning crevasse, which, you know, that's it, I think that might be the same size. It, you know, it's obviously a little bigger for the poster, but it's harrowing and it makes it look like this is a dangerous thing. But like, you know, it's not that. There's never a moment that captures the tension of that poster. And
I thought it was weird too. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no scene where they're like, all right, we're going up to Everest now. Like, it's so like gradual, and then like they're just doing it, and then it's like, I don't know, I just felt like that there was not that much escalation in the film. Like,
well, that's one of the weird things you find out about when people climb Everest. They go up to base camp and they actually have to make a couple of ascents in order to acclimatize.
Yeah.
Which is when the red blood cells in your body multiply to carry more oxygen. But yeah, the movie doesn't make really a lot of hard distinctions between those and then the actual attempt.
Yeah, and even like his direction, like a few of the shots I thought were really interesting when it's kind of these overhead shots where you see like helicopter, you know, it's like a helicopter shot and you see you know, like the relation they are to the peak of the mountain and stuff. I thought that was interesting. And then but there's a whole kind of second half of this film where it's just kind of cutting back and forth to different people in different places, and he kind of loses that sense of geography, which I think would have made it a little more interesting to know like their journey. I don't know if you guys felt that way.
No, I mean, I was expecting, you know, day one, and then it has their. I was expecting a journey instead of, you know, sort of like what I said with Black Mass, where it was, you know, here's 40 minutes of introduction, and then suddenly things are happening. It's a real drag. It's a real pain in the ass. I don't understand why this seems to be happening more and more with films. I don't know if it's that they're trying to hang on to reality too hard. It was strange for me sitting there learning about so many people, but barely even being able to remember their names, and then they start up, and it's weird. It's,
yeah, I think explain it. I don't want to like guess into the production because obviously it wasn't there. So, but he shot like a lot of it on location, like a lot of the base camp stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it was, you know, partial soundstage stuff. So I wonder if like, cause that's a huge dichotomy in the movie. That's maybe where it loses those transitions where it feels like some of the movie they're at base camp and then the rest, they're just in crazy situations and there's no in between. But that could be like what it is on the mountain, but I feel like they don't really explain that very much. It's, you know, there's a documentary out that came out in August actually called Maru. I don't know. I reviewed it on the site, but that movie, I didn't love it, but it does a stellar job of like placing it on the mountain just because it's these people who actually, did you see it, Danny? Yeah. You know about it. Anyways.
I just read about it.
You read about it? Yeah. Yeah. It's like they literally shot all the footage that you see in the film, like, while they're on the mountain, then all the way up to, you know, it takes place over two different climbs, and it's so immersive and really all that footage is so interesting, and you really get into their mindset. And if you were disappointed by this film not kind of delving into that, I would highly recommend it. Some of the footage there is, you know, better than what Hollywood can create with this. So,
well, that was the thing. I guess, you know, the soundstage stuff, it never felt dangerous, and I don't think that they had shots that really gave you the scale and the consequence of everything that was going on. You know,
yeah,
it just never felt that you were that high up.
Yeah. There was we can talk in spoilers. There's the one shot I referenced was kind of the most interesting to me, but mixed bag definitely overall.
And I wanted to bring up, like, this is the same problem I had with Black Mass, I've said, but it's just, like, there's so much in this movie that doesn't need to be there. Like, there's so much extraneous stuff. Like, if you get to the heart of this, it's a story about people who want to touch the sky and pay for it because nature is an unforgiving bitch. And this movie wastes so much time on, like, their little, like, you know, conversations with their wives and, oh, there's so many people on the mountain. It, like, seemed like it was making a point about the commercialization of Everest, which was apparently an actual issue, but it just, it integrated it so poorly that it just came off as a completely unnecessary digression.
Yeah, I would have kind of loved to see, you know, like, the Sherpas that come along, people that
are here.
So it would have been cool to see kind of their viewpoint where it's like all these asshole Americans that paid $65,000 and then, like, you know, they certainly don't get paid that much to do it. And it would just, I think that would be so interesting to dive into their kind of mindset. And supposedly there is a documentary coming out later this year called Sherpa that goes into that. But I haven't seen that yet, but I heard good things. And but in this movie, they're just like, they have one scene where they like fight with each other when they try to combine groups, and then that's right, all they're given.
Don't like each other.
Yeah.
I turned to my girlfriend at the end of this and I was like, this should just be called White Privilege on a Mountain. Like,
oh, God.
No.
But yeah, that's any other final non-spoiler thoughts before we get into spoilers?
Jason Clarke, I think, did a decent job with what he was given. He's clearly the lead here, unlike like Jake Gyllenhaal or anyone that the marketing was trying to tell you was. So
yeah, it was weird. Maybe like 30 minutes in this movie, I was like, I thought I remembered that Jake Gyllenhaal was on the poster. Maybe I misremembered that. And then he shows up, like, broing out like Matthew McConaughey, just sitting on some rocks, being awesome.
Sure. Nope. Yeah, I was just, your point about sort of what the film is actually about. It's like there are a few really brief scenes where the characters kind of reveal themselves a little bit. Like Josh Brolin has that interesting line where he says, like, in his normal life, he feels there's like a shadow following him. And that was kind of an interesting scene. And it was interesting that there were like a couple scenes like that, but they never really foregrounded that part of the film. It was more of like just like sort of a teamwork type movie. Even yeah. John Hawks has that scene where he talks about why he's doing it. So it would have been interesting to get more of that.
I think that this is something that I said with Black Mass, because again, these two movies in my head are very similar. They failed for very similar reasons. You can't just start at the beginning and then work your way through, because you don't have time to get into anything. So if you had begun this film saying, like, you know, these men had trained for 4 months to make the ascent, today they begin, and then just found artful ways through dialogue to sketch in their history and their past, you know, it would have been better. You know?
Yeah.
Am I wrong here? Like, it feels like we've forgotten how to tell a story in the midst of a narrative instead of grinding an entire film to a halt so people can literally turn to each other and say, hey, why are you doing this?
Yeah, I really think both films fail because there's no real distinct point of view. And with Black Mass, like,
yeah.
Whitey Bulger's
yeah, Black Mass is so confusing.
Whitey Bulger's point of view, I think, is really dull. Like, I would rather seen almost like Jesse Plemons' character. I think yeah. he might have even discussed this. But and then Everest, the closest point of view you get is Jason Clarke's character. But even then, there's anytime it kind of cuts away from that, the tension kind of gets sucked out.
It does. All right. Well, let's talk about spoilers, because I can. There's a moment in this film, I believe, that perfectly sums up why I think it's a failure as a film, just on a basic storytelling level.
Oh yeah, let's start with that.
Yeah. So, so spoilers. So we're all clear. Jason Clarke dies, and I didn't know the names of everyone involved. Like, I was aware this was a true story, but obviously it's been a while since I'd read up on it, so it was all new to me. And the way that the film is progressing, it doesn't feel like a movie where people are going to start to die. And, you know, Walden Media is primarily a very, like, uplifting production company. So, you know, they had all this stuff about, like, never let go on the poster, and it just seemed like it was going to be about the triumph of man. But it's not. Many
yeah, that is
die.
A weird tagline.
Jake Gyllenhaal dies. Why? I don't know. Like, what was he doing? I'm not sure. And that was weird. But what's weirdest is that Jason Clarke's character gets stranded very close to the summit, somewhere on the Hillary Step, I believe. And he's able to talk with his wife, and he says, you know, okay, I'm going to hang on through the night, and I'm going to try again tomorrow. And then he does, and he doesn't make it, and they're like, hey, you got to hang on one more night. And he's like, okay, I'm going to do that. Has another conversation with his wife. You know, dry eyes are not to be found in the theater. And then we get Josh Brolin standing up, and he is able to, they thought he was dead. He was like out and exposed for like 23 hours. But he stands up, he makes it back. He then goes down like two more camps, and then they have this thrilling, you know, helicopter ascent. And helicopter, this is like the furthest up a helicopter's ever gone. And they get him out. And I was like, okay, this is the point in the movie where all hope was lost, but now it seems like they're going to be fine. And then it cuts to everyone being in an airport, and I'm like, where the hell is Jason Clarke? And apparently he died. The
oh, movie, yeah.
Like, tonally and narratively did not handle that transition well at all.
Yeah, I felt like very much like, let's cap the movie off with this. Like,
yeah, it's like, ooh, it's going to be a real downer if we just have Rob Hall freezing to death. So let's get Beck back to his wife. But there was never like a moment where people seemed to like come to the understanding that Rob wasn't going to make it. And it was so strange. It was when they were in the airport, like, oh, then they're going to show him like coming off the plane in a wheelchair and it's going to be like the fake reversal, but no, he fucking died.
Yeah.
I think by that point I had got the feeling that he would die, but earlier it was definitely like, there was a shift in the film, but I didn't really mind that. Like I thought it got kind of interesting. I was actually, there's one shot with the first shot when Jason Clarke wakes up in that like area and he's basically like, it seems like he can't move. That shot like really got to me. It was like,
yeah,
pretty terrifying, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually liked the calls he made to his wife. Those were I found those pretty emotional.
Those were very effective.
And it was kind of cool. Like it was kind of like a mini climax that was just conducted through like radio, and like no one was moving. It was just like it somehow made like talking like a centerpiece sequence, because it is like a weird story to structure. Because like the first hour feels like, okay, we're building up to this like awesome summit, and then we'll come down and I'll like, you know, have fun. But there's just like, there's so many things that happen, and like there is like that awkward tonal transition. But to go back to your point about not knowing people's names, I know like when the end credits came up and they showed the pictures of the real life people, there were at least like three or four that I was like, I'm not sure which actor that was, or
yeah,
they weren't very well sketched.
It's definitely difficult when most of the film your characters have to be covered up with something to survive.
I was wondering if they were going to try to make something of that, because there are moments where people like pull down a scarf or something to talk, and
the entire last descent, when someone comes upon someone, I'm always like, oh, who is it going to be? Because you have no idea. Because there's like all
these actually added to the tension of the movie. I was like, ooh, who's going to get rescued now?
Yeah. And then Jake Gyllenhaal and Josh Brolin are just kind of like, no, I'm good where I am.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. The only time you kind of see things through people's eyes is when they can't see anything, like with Josh Brolin. Kind of formal technique. I don't know. I think it worked, just because I didn't realize how like he would have never been able to climb up the mountain. So I thought it was interesting how they portrayed that. And the one shot I was referring to before is, well, there's two. One is like an overhead, almost like bird's eye view shot, but like right above them, when you see like the cliff incline, that narrow cliff where John Hawks falls off.
That was a good shot. Like, yeah. I liked that moment.
There's two moments there. One is when they first go on and you kind of see the incline from above their heads, and I thought that was effective. It was almost like in, you know, like Ghost Protocol when Brad Bird's camera moves above Tom Cruise. Like, it had that kind of like vertigo sense where I never really got that from the rest of the film. And then the shot where John Hawks falls off, I thought was effective because he just kind of goes into the darkness. There's no like Die Hard-esque like Alan Rickman falling from the building. He just kind of goes, he just kind of falls off, and then that's it. And yeah, so I thought that was kind of good. Well,
there was another cool shot. It was like the midnight of like the summit day, where it like the camera starts in the tent, and then it like Jason Clarke opens it up, and then the camera kind of like moves out with him.
Yeah,
and they all sort of gather. I thought that there were a few cool shots that kind of circled like that. So there was some cool like camera stuff going on.
I don't know. It's just, it's weird because I could pinpoint
masterful film.
Masterful film. I think between this and Black Mass, I'd probably recommend this more.
Yeah, I would too. It's more of an experience. Like there's a visceral thrill to some of it, and you're seeing something you haven't seen before in some aspects, not story wise certainly, but
no, not story wise.
But yeah, I mean, it's more of like a spectacle. If you're looking for spectacle, I guess.
Yeah, you'll
even though I did see The Walk at these are like the two big IMAX movies over the last 2 weeks, and that is a much better spectacle.
And I am looking forward to seeing that. I mean, you know, Black Mass, I came home and a couple days later I watched The Departed. The Departed. And then this movie, I came home and I wanted to watch The Gray.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like there are smaller, better films that I think don't water down what these two films were trying to do.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's a shame too, because I was looking forward to like if you watch the Everest IMAX documentary, it's a powerful, imposing mountain. It's a mountain.
it is interesting with this and The Walk to some aspect. It's like these documentaries that do such a great job of putting you there, you know, with Man on Wire, with The Walk. And then it's like, how are you going to translate this? It's both are kind of cookie cutter in the sense. But The Walk, actually, the difference with The Walk is that, you know, there was no filmed footage of the event at all. It was only photographs. Whereas with like something like Meru, you can see, I mean, it's obviously not this exact expedition, but you can see that experience recreated, not even recreated. You can see that experience already in a great, in a really thrilling documentary. So,
yeah. So if there'd been a little more climbing, a little more danger, I think this could have been an interesting film, but as it is, it's merely an acceptable entertainment.
Yep.
Well, that's it for this. Anything coming to Blu-ray that we want to shout out?
Spy, that was kind of funny.
Spy, I funny. Heard that was funny.
Funny film.
Entourage, which was awful.
that existed.
I didn't see it, but Unexpected. The poster's horrible. The Kobe Smulders movie. But we loved it. Dan Mecca loved it at Sundance, so I do want to see it. It's supposed to be really well done.
That's the one that I thought Results was.
Oh, yes. Finally, it comes full circle.
Good Lord.
And then A Room with the View and The Honeymoon Killers on Criterion, neither of which I've seen, but should shout that out. Nice. And Cop Car, which was decent.
Zipper and Return to Sender.
Ooh, those are two. I think those are the two worst reviewed movies of the year on the film stage.
Ooh,
nice. Zipper is the Patrick Wilson sex addiction.
Yes,
political drama.
Oh, and actually,
when you put it like that, how could it not be great?
another one I should shout out is Black Coal Thin Ice, which I think that was either the Venice.
Oh yeah, is that Berlin. Like get a release? Yeah.
It didn't get a theatrical release, but it won Berlin, right, or Venice?
One of them.
But that's a noir, modern noir thriller that is supposedly very good. Check that out.
And I shall definitely.
Oh shit! Wait, there's also a Blu-ray for 37, A Final Promise. This is one of these like four-walled movies that I had to like review a few months ago. That's just like hilariously bad, and I can't believe it's on. It opens and there's a musician sitting in a chair, and I think he has like 37 tattooed on his chest or something, and he goes like. There's a voiceover and he's like, you know, the band's good. Things are going good. And pretty soon I'm going to turn 37 and then I'll be fucking gone. And then like this rock music starts playing and it's like the opening credits.
Sounds like,
and like
this sounds incredible.
Brian, you should actually watch.
I should also say The Duke of Burgundy, which is very good. Peter Strickland's new movie.
Yeah,
it's on Blu-ray finally.
All right, excellent. Well, that's it for today. That's it's going to be a short episode, I guess. So that's all. Let's tell them where we can be found, guys. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, that you will be able to hear us again early next week, talking about Sicario, the newest film by Denis Villeneuve. And you'll remember that is the director of Enemy and Prisoners, which, you know, I'm pretty sure we all liked quite a bit.
And then the Martian after that, right?
Yeah.
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 That comes out the same. Yeah, they both open wide on this Friday. So they're both, I've seen them both. They're good.
I thought the Martian, oh no, I keep thinking that the Martian's coming out on the 9th. It's coming out on
No. Yeah. That is reserved for Pan.
So Sicario, our review will hit on Friday. The Martian will come probably Sunday or Monday. And then I will be seeing Pan, so you know, maybe I'll have a write up on that for the next week. Oh. I don't know if I can talk people into watching it for this show.
that will be difficult, considering Nick Newman's love for Joe Wright.
Oh yeah, he loves Joe Wright just beyond words.
Yeah.
I'll also have a video essay about Enemy coming out, so if you give a shit about that, you should check it out. It'll be out sometime.
Oh sure.
Soonish.
Yeah, probably sometime in October.
A Halloween special.
Yes.
All right. That's it for today. Jordan Raup, why don't you tell the fine people at home where you can be found?
Sure. Yeah. I'm writing every day on thefilmstage.com and at Twitter at JP Raup.
Danny King.
Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin. Yeah.
All right. You can also find me writing at thefilmstage.com. You can find my review of Sicario, actually, at dearfilm.net. And you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Tune in next week.